This is The Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to this podcast at Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Or go to reason.com/podcasts and sign up there. The Bitcoin 2021 conference in Miami in early June wasn't just a celebration of the end of the pandemic and an opportunity for cryptocurrency and blockchain true believers to gather up close and maskless with more than 10,000 fellow travelers. It was a watershed moment for a technological and cultural movement whose goal is nothing short of the separation of money and state. Bitcoin emerged just a dozen years ago when a pseudonymous genius shared a 9-page paper on an obscure mailing list. And now it's the third largest currency on the planet, according to Deutsche Bank. In another 12 years, we may look back on Bitcoin 2021 as the Woodstock of the crypto generation. Headline acts included former Representative Ron Paul, who embraced cryptocurrency despite his long history as a gold bug. Twitter and Square CEO Jack Dorsey, who said the internet needs a native currency and pledged billions to help develop the necessary infrastructure. And then there was skateboarding legend Tony Hawk, who suggested that the Bitcoin subculture is poised to go mainstream the same way skating did in the 1990s. In between panels and talks by major Bitcoin figures such as Eric Voorhees, Nick Carter, Elizabeth Stark, and Robert Breedlove, the DJ Diplo, sextape entrepreneur Paris Hilton, and boxing legend Floyd Mayweather added celebrity sizzle. Attendees heard the first jailhouse interview with Ross Ulbricht since he was given an effective life sentence for creating the pioneering darknet site Silk Road, which helped bootstrap Bitcoin in its early years. On the final day of the conference, El Salvador announced it would become the first country on the planet to accept Bitcoin as legal tender. One of the biggest and most surprising breakout stars of the conference was Cynthia Lummis, a 66-year-old freshman Republican senator from Wyoming. From the stage and in this interview with Reason, Lummis forcefully made the case that Bitcoin not only provides a legitimate alternative store of value and medium of exchange, but would act as a check on the devaluation of the U.S. dollar and other currencies through the runaway creation of fiat money. She also believes that the growth of Bitcoin, mistakenly assailed for its heavy use of electricity, is acting as a spur to create renewable energy in places such as Wyoming. And she extolled its privacy features in a world of increasing surveillance by governments and corporations alike. Here is the Reason interview with Senator Cynthia Lummis.
Senator, thanks for talking to Reason.
It's my pleasure, Nick.
What's your main interest in crypto? I mean, you're in the Senate and in Congress more broadly, you're like a leading light on this type of stuff. What do you see as the value of this new technology, especially as it intersects with a kind of fiat currency system that has really gone off the rails?
I had been my state's treasurer in Wyoming.
I think that suffices. I understand why you're interested in crypto.
Yeah, I was always looking for a store of value. Mm-hmm. And I see Bitcoin specifically as a great store of value. Only 21 million will ever be developed. And so we know that scarcity will protect its value going into the future, unlike the U.S. dollar that we're printing more of every single day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, by the end of this interview, there'll be millions more in circulation, right? But I would think you're in the U.S. Senate. Is Bitcoin or is crypto more broadly, is that a competitor to, the U.S. dollar?
It's not a competitor, but it's an alternative saving instrument for people who are concerned that the U.S. dollar saved will be worth far less than when it's deposited in savings. So to me, I see it as an opportunity to save for my future in something that will grow in value, not fall in value.
Do you own Bitcoin or other crypto?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Are you cashing out or are you?
Oh, no,
you're long on Bitcoin.
I'm what they call a hodler.
Okay.
I'm long. I'm in it for the distance.
You are a hodler. You are working both to bring kind of an understanding and a legislative agenda around crypto, into fruition. What's the regulatory framework that you want to see crypto, being used that apart from Currently, it basically is treated as a private
commodity.
Mm-hmm. So it's subject to things like capital gains tax. Where do you see things going? What's your dream vision?
It is to create a regulatory and statutory framework, a sandbox, if you will, that innovators know the parameters, but the parameters don't constrain them in their innovation as they develop new uses, new tools, new opportunities. So the blockchain will provide, for example, the opportunity to put both contracts and the money or value associated with that contract on the blockchain, so it cannot be adulterated or have there be miscommunication about what the contract entails. So it makes a secure framework, and we want to make sure that legislation protects that and doesn't stifle innovation.
So you want to have a kind of clear, predictable, stable set of rules in place, and then that way people can kind of get on with the business of building a crypto world.
That's correct, Nick.
What's the timeline for that, and where are the main sticking points? Is it mostly that people have no idea what you're talking about, or is it that they're like, I kind of get this and I don't like this because it might hem in my ability to keep printing money?
Right now, the lack of understanding or knowledge about what the distributed ledger is, what Bitcoin is, what blockchain is, it's total mystery to most members of Congress. So the first part's going to be to inform, educate, bring in experts who can help explain the importance of this. Some of the urgency is because China is making a digital yuan, mm-hmm. and intends to roll it out, as we understand, at the Winter Olympics in 2022. They want to compete against the U.S. status as having the dollar as the world currency, reserve currency. So that's some of the urgency.
Are you in favor of the U.S. creating digital dollars as well?
I am.
Okay, and you're not worried that to the extent that the U.S. gets into the digital space, it's just going to pollute the pool?
It's not. Oh. There are different reasons to have a digital dollar or a central bank digital currency than to have Bitcoin. As long as the dollar is in use, it's important that we make faster transactions, that they clear faster, that people have more opportunity to use a digital format for the U.S. dollar. Then to use Bitcoin, it would be for perhaps a different purpose, at least initially.
So that's where you're going to go to buy your soon-to-be legal drugs, right? You're going to go on the dark net web and use Bitcoin. Did you ever use Silk Road, Senator, may I ask?
You know, I'm aware that there are softwares that can detect fraud or illicit use of Bitcoin and the blockchain, and it usually has to do with a pattern of use that would require the usual privacy associated with Bitcoin to be transgressed. Mm-hmm. But the software is working well that can ferret out illicit uses.
So you're not worried about, I mean, this is one of the growing case against Bitcoin and crypto in general, that as it gets more popular, it's only being used by criminals or for bad actions. You don't really buy that.
Not at all.
Yeah.
In fact, it is used less for criminal activity than traditional fiat currency is.
How do you feel about China is, you know, on the one hand, a plurality of Bitcoin mining is being done in China, at least as best as we can tell. On the other, you know, so people are like, oh, well, we have to attack Bitcoin because we have to attack China from a United States point of view. But the Chinese government is also cracking down on crypto. You know, what worries you the most about how the Chinese government is acting towards Bitcoin?
Well, they're cracking down on Bitcoin because they want to give rise to the digital yuan. The digital yuan will allow them to surveil its use. So they'll be able to track the way people are using digital yuan, and they'll be able to punish people who are using it in ways that the Chinese Communist Party doesn't like. If they contribute to a religious organization, they'll be able to crack down on them. Maybe a person contributes to a religious organization and then tries to rent a car to drive to another city in China, they're not going to be able to. These are the kind of manipulative tactics that will be used with a digital yuan. So having a digitized dollar that is much more private because of our own constitutional Bill of Rights, the Fourth Amendment, will provide a degree of privacy that the yuan is intended not to have.
Can you talk a little bit about, and then there's Bitcoin, which is even more private, you know, and it's not anonymous, as a lot of people say, it's more pseudonymous, but it provides privacy. It seems like a lot of Republicans over the past 20 years or so have gotten away from that idea, you know, that things should be private because the government doesn't have any business knowing what you're up to. And it doesn't mean, like, if you want privacy, that you're a criminal. But it seems like in the Bitcoin argument, a lot of people increasingly on the Republican side of the aisle are like, if we can't find out, if the government can't find out what's going on, we should really regulate it tightly. You seem to be coming from a different tradition.
Absolutely. I want to disabuse people of that and have them recognize that Bitcoin, because of its privacy, is very freedom loving and oriented. Take, for example, the fact that today people in Venezuela can privately convert their wealth to Bitcoin so they can avoid the hyperinflation and the repressive regime that didn't used to exist. It provides great freedom to people who are living in hyperinflation or repressive governments.
So it works in the United States.
Right? Well, yeah. And as we see inflation growing, it should, I think, alert the Fed that their proposed 2% inflation strategy is not working right now and that we need to address this. There's too much money floating around in the economy right now.
You mentioned that you were interested in crypto because you had served as Wyoming's treasurer. What about intellectually? How did you get into the idea of competing private currencies? Is this something, you know, did you read a lot of Milton Friedman or Friedrich Hayek, or where did that come from?
Actually, my reading of Hayek came after my first investment in Bitcoin, which was in 2013. And once you invest in something, you have a little skin in the game, yeah. You start to learn more about it. So I invested as an experiment, and that experiment has become not only an interest, but now a fascination.
One of the other arguments in the United States that's being advanced increasingly against Bitcoin is that it's an energy hog, and that, you know, through a couple of, you know, poorly structured studies, the idea is that if Bitcoin actually becomes a global currency, all the electricity on the planet, maybe in the universe, will be devoted to Bitcoin transactions. That's not, you know, that's not true. But you have talked about how Bitcoin is actually helping to either make use of stranded energy or curtailed energy in Wyoming, or actually develop renewable supply. Can you talk about that?
Well, we know that even now, Bitcoin mining is 40% sourced by renewables, whereas globally, the average use is 12%. So even now, it is more intensively used using non-hydrocarbon sources of energy. But in Wyoming, you'll see a trailer full of Bitcoin mining equipment pull into an oil and gas drill site. They'll hook up to the natural gas that's being vented into the atmosphere because it's not yet hooked up to a pipeline, and they'll use that as a source of energy. So it's actually taking an asset that's stranded and being wasted and using it to mine Bitcoin.
Why isn't that more widely appreciated?
I think that people like me need to use the opportunity that you've given me today, Nick, and other opportunities like it to explain that.
Which party is better on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general, do you think? Or is this not about partisanship? And is it, you know, crypto, Bitcoin, blockchain, when you say these things, you know, some people, like, their eyes light up. Many other people, you know, they get dark scowls on their face. You know, is the Republican Party better on Bitcoin than the Democratic Party? Is it old people versus young people, coast versus rural? What is it?
That's what's so fun about it, is it's all of those things and none of those things. We have a financial innovation caucus that I founded with Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, a Democrat, and it is bipartisan. We have members of both parties, and in the House, there is interest in cryptocurrency and financial technology and Bitcoin from both parties, and it's all age groups. Most of the people I'm meeting with here are younger, a lot younger than I am. They're my daughter's age. And so they're informing me and educating me as I try to figure out how we can craft a regulatory framework that doesn't stifle what all these young innovators are trying to do. Takes me a while to grasp some of their thought processes because they're so far ahead of me in terms of understanding technology, but I'm catching up, and I need to help my colleagues in Congress catch up.
Some of the people we're talking to here are, you know, very worried that the government, the federal government, is going to come after Bitcoin at some point, and that they're going to, you know, either take it over or destroy it. What can you tell them about whether that's going to happen?
The people that I talk to that are policymakers, that are thinking the way I'm thinking, want to make sure that doesn't happen. We want to make sure that Bitcoin, stable coins, tokens can innovate, and that the US dollar can innovate as well and become a digital currency. So there's going to be formats that people can use that are much more user-friendly than our more old-fashioned forms of currency. So young people are ready to embrace it. People my age are either nervous about it, or perhaps they're in traditional banking and they think that this is going to pull the rug out from under their business. So we have to find ways to explain it so traditional bankers understand that, yes, it's going to change their business model, but it's not going to destroy their business model. And we need to inform policymakers that of the benefits of having these various opportunities to store wealth and value can exist side by side.
You mentioned your age. How old are you?
I'm 66.
Okay, so you're on the young side of the Senate, right? This is true. Do you worry at all that America is becoming a gerontocracy? I'm close enough in age to you where I remember looking at Soviet leaders and being like, oh my God, they're ancient. And, you know, they're not. They were in their 50s when the Soviet Union collapsed. Do you worry that American leadership is getting old and that with that kind of old age comes fear and anxiety about the future?
Young people are as worried as people my age, that we're spending too much money, that the U.S. dollar will lose value, that we'll have inflation, maybe hyperinflation. So they want to see an alternative like Bitcoin protected. We want to see tokens and stable coins available. So there are places to go if the US dollar underperforms dramatically. So that's true of people of both ages. What I am finding, however, is that too many members of Congress continue to believe that we can spend more and more, 117% of GDP, and not have ramifications for our economy. I believe now we're seeing it play out that we cannot do that, and we're going to have to adjust. And among the ways we can adjust is to help provide opportunities for Bitcoin tokens, for digital currencies that will help us protect savings, wealth.
Republicans tend to talk a really good game about cutting the size, scope, and spending of government when they're not in power. You know, under Donald Trump, spending went up when Republicans were in power. Over the past year, spending has gone through the roof. It continues to go through the roof. Is there any remnant left, a serious remnant in the Republican Party, that's talking about reducing the size, scope, and spending of government?
There, it is so small, and it is so overwhelmed by people who see no end to spending and don't want to be part of an end to spending. So I think the Republican Party has pretty much abandoned its concern about the debt and the deficit and spending. So the whole reason I ran for Congress and now ran for the Senate is because I'm concerned about the debt, the deficit and spending. But I'm in such a small minority of members who are concerned about it that we're going to lose. So that's one of the reasons that Bitcoin is attractive to me, and I want to make sure we protect and nurture its capabilities, because at some point, if we had a black swan event, at least we'd have an alternative, and Bitcoin represents that store of value that I'm concerned we might lose with the U.S. dollar.
Are there any Democrats who are also worried about the spending?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I serve with some on something called the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. That was a very bipartisan group. It still exists. I had to leave that board when I ran for the U.S. Senate, but I continue to use them for advice, counsel, and policy ideas. But we know we're swimming upstream, and I very much want to run parallel courses. One is to try to save the U.S. dollar. The other is to enhance the opportunity for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency in case we jump the track and crash the train.
A final question. Will you state definitively that Donald Trump lost the 2020 election?
I have said that again and again.
Okay. Senator, thanks so much for talking to Reason.
My pleasure, Nick. Thank you.
This has been the Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe to this podcast at Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Or go to reason.com/podcasts and sign up there. Thanks for listening.